Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy, and we appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we will review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and discussed issues related to the field of speech-language pathology.
You can use this podcast for ASHA professional development. For more information about us and certification maintenance hours, go to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to you in part by listeners like you. You can support our work by going to our website or social media pages and contributing. You can also find permanent products, notes, and other handouts, including a handout for this episode. Some items are free, others are not, but everything is always affordable. Visit our website, www.slpnerdcast.com, to submit a call for papers, to come on the show and present with us. Contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
Just a quick disclaimer, the contents of this episode are not meant to replace clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts, and its guests do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episodes unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs, but we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and fair representation of each topic that we tackle. That being said, it is always likely that there is an article we've missed or another perspective that isn't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We would love to hear from you.
One very quick housekeeping thing before we get started in today's episode. This episode is releasing in February of 2021, which we have deemed Funding February. We mention this in almost every single episode, but our podcast is brought to you in part by listeners like you. Individual support from our listeners keeps SLP Nerdcast going. We are nowhere near as cool as NPR, but the concept is the same. The donations and contributions that we get from our listeners keep our prices very low and keeps the podcast ad-free. If you are able, please consider going to our website or social media pages to contribute. If each one of our listeners contributed $1 to $2, we would be able to cover our costs for an entire year, which would keep access to the small library of episodes that we have for free. It will keep our podcast ad-free, and it will allow us to continue to keep our ASHA CEU prices as low as a fancy cup of coffee. We would not be here without your support, and we are so grateful to all of the listeners who have supported us along the way. So thank you, and now without further ado, on to today's episode. We had the most amazing conversation today.
It was so good. It was so good that we stayed on the Zoom call for a while after and talked about how awesome it was.
And I'm over the moon with our guests. So we had the unbelievable pleasure of welcoming Nina Reeves onto our show. Nina is a speech and language pathologist who is a board certified specialist in fluency disorders. She is a staff fluency specialist for Frisco ISD and fluency specialist consultant for San Diego Unified Schools. She's a nationally recognized workshop presenter in the area of fluency disorders and is the author of clinically based materials. She's co-owner of Stuttering Therapy Resources. She's the recipient of numerous awards, including the Ash Foundation Van Hattem Award for Outstanding Contributions to Public Schools. She was recently awarded the 2019 ASHA Certificate of Recognition for Special Contributions in Preschool Grade 12 Education Settings. And I can say without hesitation that she deserves every single one of those awards.
She does.
She just dropped science and left us feeling like, I don't know. We learned so much and it was profound beyond profound. And we're so excited to just let you guys listen to her because there's nothing we can say to preface there's nothing we can say to make it any better. It was just so great. So in the interest of time, let me read quickly through our financial and non-financial disclosures that are required by ASHA. Nina Reeves' financial disclosures. She's the author and co-owner of Stuttering Therapy Resources, Inc. She receives royalties and ownership interest and intellectual property from that entity. Nina Reeves' non-financial disclosures. She previously volunteered for both National Stuttering Association and the Stuttering Foundation of America. Kate, that's me. My financial disclosures, I'm the owner and founder of Grand Bois Therapy and Consulting, LLC, and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. My non-financial disclosures, I'm a member of ASHA-STIG 12 and serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. I'm a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group. Amy's financial disclosures.
That's me. I'm an employee of a public school system and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. And I have some non-financial disclosures. I'm also a member of ASHA. I'm a member of ASHA-STIG 12. And I also serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children.
So that was so long, so annoying to have to read it. I'm sorry. We just had to read it.
Two other housekeeping things just to quickly get out of the way, our learning objectives for the day. Learning objective number one, describe best practices for fluency assessment. Learning objective number two, describe principles behind the practice of effective stuttering therapy. And learning objective number three, list three techniques for helping children enhance their ease of communication. Nina was so incredibly, not only generous with her time, but after we were finished recording and we were chatting and wrapping up, she would actually like to offer a discount to all of our listeners, which is just so incredibly generous of her. So if you are interested in 10% off the resources that she has available, you can use code SLPNERD, that's all caps, SLPNERD, at her stuttering resources website that is listed in the show notes for a 10% discount. So without further ado, please welcome Nina Reeves.
Nina Reeves.
Today, we are so excited to welcome the queen of stuttering, Nina Reeves. Welcome, Nina. We're so glad that you're here.
Well, I'm so glad to be here, too. Thank you guys for having me.
It's good to start with a laugh, isn't it?
It is. Let's roll right in it.
We're going to jump right in. Nina, you are here to discuss school-age stuttering therapy. And before we get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, I'm here in Dallas, Texas area. I grew up in Illinois and then married a Texan. So here I am in Texas. I am a board certified specialist in fluency disorders, have been for quite a while now. I won't date myself, but I'm pretty old, and I love working with kids who stutter. It was not going to be what I was going to do because I was born with a cleft palate and I had a speech therapist all of my elementary career. And I was going to be a speech therapist from the time I was 9 years old. And that's what I was going to do. And then I met my first kid who stuttered, knew I didn't know crud about what I was doing with him. And, you know, he was reading fluently and then he'd get up and go, I'll see you later. And I thought, I'm not feeling good about this. So I jumped in with both feet and started learning about stuttering. And then we call it the black hole that never let me out. So, because once people know you know about stuttering, they won't let you talk about anything else.
I believe that. It's such a, I know we were talking about this a little bit before we started, but it's such a specific specialty area that I am sure that as soon as anyone finds out you are the queen of stuttering, they want to just tap you for all of your knowledge. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. And then I ended up, you know, because I was so involved in the stuttering community, I ended up marrying a guy who stutters. And he was chairman of the board of the National Stuttering Association, and I was volunteering, and then there was that.
Oh, that's such a lovely story.
It is. He's the veterinarian who stutters. He's on the CFCC committee. Like, he's more active in ASHA than I am.
Wow, and that's so awesome.
We're just this geek, you know. And I work with Scott Yaris, who geeks out about stuttering every day, every moment of his life. So we're really all about it.
Oh, you're in good nerdly company.
Yes.
We love a nerd.
This is going to be so great.
Nina, we've had a number of listener questions, people who've written in asking questions about this topic. And we were hoping you would start us off by just telling us a little bit about assessment and the assessment process as it relates to stuttering.
It's a great question because that gets rolled into how do I start with this? Right. And so that assessment piece is so important when we're trying to set up an appropriate therapy plan for a kiddo. And so the number one thing to know is get that multi-dimensional assessment. So you want to look at all things for this child, because stuttering therapy is communication therapy. So, and lots of kids who stutter don't come as pure stutterers. They have other things going on. And so we want to get a really thorough case history. Where has this child been? What do the parents think about it? What has the past therapy been like? What did the kid like about it and not? What do the teachers understand about stuttering? So getting a thorough case history, not just a speech health history, although that's important. Getting a fluency disorder history about what they've been told and what they've been doing. And that really helps us when we want to get buy-in from parents and other caregivers. And it helps us know when we're looking at our assessment, we have a better framework of past. The assessment is present, and then our therapy plan is the future. So when we do the assessment, we want to make sure, I would just suggest to you, go to the ASHA scope of practice and you will see the ICF model of all disorders.
Yes.
And yes, yay.
Yes, that's an ASA. The ICF model is not talked about enough.
No, it isn't. And it's right. It's plopped right in to the scope of practice. And when you go to the ASHA practice portal for fluency and fluency disorders, you'll see a great bit of information of how Scott Yaris and Seth Titchener and Bob Quisel have adapted the ICF for stuttering.
That's awesome.
I love to ask stupid questions. That's what I do really well. What is the ICF for for people listening who might not know?
Okay. So thank you. I nerded out on that. Sorry.
That's okay.
It is the International Classification of Functioning from the World Health Organization.
Perfect.
It is supposed to be how we're working with assessing and addressing every communication disorder we work with. And that diagram really helps me say, oh, my assessment needs to include all of this. And then my therapy plan, you know, will take the parts the child needs. So then my goals, my objectives, my therapy becomes what the child needs, not only in the observable speech behaviors, which you're going to assess, but it's just what we can see. Notice I said observable speech behaviors. You're not going to see every stutter. So yes, we're going to do a baseline. We're going to do an SSI or a test of childhood stuttering, or what I like to do is a language sample and then do a transcription of both the non-stuttered and the stuttered disfluencies and look at how the child is stuttering, not just how many times. I can't stress this enough. When we get a kiddo in for an assessment and we're doing the charting of the disfluencies, I don't want to say it means nothing, but it kind of doesn't mean a lot. It's a great way for us to look at how the child stutters, but the numbers aren't the deal, because we can't use numbers for eligibility any longer. It doesn't have to be 10%. That's all old stuff. So the numbers are great, fine, in three different speaking situations. Get that baseline, but no, it's about how the child is stuttering that's more important. The types of stutters, how long, how tight, how often. That is great, but then you have to make sure you're not just looking at those observable speech behaviors, but you're looking at how the child thinks and feels about their communication. So this is where the ICF model comes into play. It's making sure that we're looking at the reactions, their participation. Are they participating in communication? And the environmental factors. Does the environment change the way the child is stuttering or how the child feels about their stuttering? And does the environment know anything about stuttering? And what they know, is it true or a myth, because lots of people think they know what stuttering is and they don't, because it looks like something that it's not. So making sure that we're looking at thoughts and feelings, observable speech behaviors, and finally, the impact on the child's life. So that's where the OASIS comes in, the overall assessment of the speaker's experience of stuttering. And I didn't say anything about our, you know, Scott Yaris and I have a publishing company where we have lots of, it's called Stuttering Therapy Resources, because that's what it is. So that's where you find us on social media. That's where you find us on our website. Stuttering Therapy Resources has some of these ideas for you. And we have a free resource section that has all sorts of free handouts and things to help everybody along their path in assessment and then in therapy. So that assessment piece is huge, and that sets us up.
I wanted to ask a question just to say it as a novel, and all our listeners know that I know nothing about fluency. So I wanted to say this back to you to make sure that I've understood some of these key components of, you know, in terms of what our listeners have asked, like, well, I don't know what to do. Where do I start? And it sounds like this is, you know, not too different from what most speech pathologists do in the regular course of treatment. You have to assess before you can treat. You have to collect your data, identify the problems, and use that to design treatment that is specific to the needs of your client. There really is that, and but you know, it, I loved when you said that, you know, it's not just the numbers, that there are all of these other additional qualitative components that are so important with fluency. And I think to me, as a totally uninformed speech pathologist, that seems like a really fundamental difference in terms of treating other motor speech disorders. Is that an accurate statement, or is that totally wrong? You can tell me I'm totally wrong. Telling me I'm wrong is probably better, because then other people will learn more.
Well, no, I think you're very much on the right track. I hate to tell you, you're doing good. Okay. But the ideas that you just gave back to me are where I was going when I said you have to look at the whole child. And stuttering is, if you think about it, if you open your mouth and you can't get words out, don't you think you would react to that a little bit? And I don't know anybody who goes, yay, I'm stuck. That's awesome. And the people in the child's environment are not reacting as, oh, no big deal. It's just a stutter. Everybody gets very worked up. So those reactions then feed on the tension. You know, anxiety doesn't cause stuttering, but high level emotions increase the amount of physical tension that's happening in your body. So yeah, you could probably stutter more when you're anxious, but it doesn't mean it caused it. And that's when people get really confused of, why are you looking into my child's thoughts and feelings about their communication? It's just this thing that shows up, you know, in the surface when they can't get their word out. And we have to do a lot of explaining that it's a whole lot more than that.
I think that I love that description. I mean, as you know, I have said this a lot in my own work, that there's this relationship, language and communication is emotional, no matter how you splice across disordered communication, across typical communication. When everybody's had that experience where you feel heated or in an argument and you walk away and you go, oh, I wish I had said that, but you know, your anxiety is high, your emotions are running high, and your communication skills are not at your fingertips. So adding this complexity on top of that is sort of, you know, obvious, but I love the way you described that it's not causal. I think that's a really important takeaway.
Yes. Yeah. And sometime maybe we'll talk about how to work with parents and teachers on understanding this. You know, the caregivers are looking for a quick fix because it looks like it's just one thing. Now they're very normal. You know, it's so normal for a parent to go, okay, let's get this over with, because we can do that with our tick and some of the other things we work with. So they're just like waiting, you know, and for some kids who stutter, they're going to continue to stutter. We don't cure stuttering in therapy, it's hard for us to say that. It's hard for us to know that. And it's hard for parents and teachers and children to hear that. But when we're talking about school-age stuttering therapy, we are trying to find out where this child is at with their communication and then help them along to feel comfortable, confident in communication, whether they stutter or don't.
So in terms of, I'm just sort of saying this back to you so that my novice brain can process all of this. So you're working in a school, you have a kid on your caseload all of a sudden who has a stutter. I feel like this scenario is probably very common. We now, having talked with you thus far, have, you know, understand that there needs to be some form of data collection and assessment before you can move forward. But what happens next? I mean, what are the, I mean, I'm just like even thinking about the title of this episode, I'm so confused about the strategies. I mean, because it seems to me as an uninformed SLP, there are a lot of different strategies. I'm just, you know, harking back to my graduate school education where you learned about the, you know, handful of common strategies. And how do you, what is that feature matching process? I mean, how do you go about planning through that?
That's a really great question, because what happens in our profession for years prior was that we went from referral to assessment to strategies. And everybody was looking for, what am I going to do with the speech motor part of this? And we forgot that there was a lot we had to do prior to ever touching a strategy. Or we could do some strategies if a child was struggling, but we still had to do the what we talk about as foundational knowledge and skills. And we can do a whole podcast on just that part, but let me briefly outline that there's a philosophical switch that we have to have when we work with school-age kids who stutter. And that is, stuttering therapy is not easy. Whew. Okay, it was hard for me to say. It's hard for everybody to hear. But everybody that's looking for the ABC and the 1-2-3 programmed approach to stuttering therapy may find themselves a couple of sessions in or a while down the road, something stops working and they have no idea where to go to next. Because there wasn't a lot of why am I doing what am I am doing. There wasn't a lot of principle behind the practice. So when I say to you stuttering therapy isn't easy, what I'm saying is it's not brain surgery, so it's doable. And it's doable in the public schools and it's doable everywhere else. But we will have to invest some time and some overtime, chunk it out, work on our understanding, because the number one thing I hear across the country, and you guys have said this, that your listeners write in, is that I don't feel like I got the training in this area. And even if I did, I don't have enough kids all the time for me to get like the flow. And I get these kids who are different ages and feel differently. They're also darn individual. It freaks me out.
How dare them being people and being individuals? How dare them?
Sarcasm. In different environments with different partners and different thoughts and feelings.
I mean, come on now.
Let's just get it together, people. I have a program and you're supposed to meet my program.
Right, right.
And you're not. And so I'm frustrated and I don't feel comfortable or competent or confident in what I'm doing. And then there goes the fear cycle. You know, I don't know anything about stuttering. Wait, you know a lot about stuttering because you know about language and you know about social pragmatics and you know about general communication and you know how to work a hierarchy of different levels. You do this stuff every day with every other kid and suddenly somebody says the word stutter and we all lose our minds.
But it's so true. We
it
do.
Is. That's me. That's so I would true. Lose my mind. I'd be calling you crying. I'd be like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
I'd call you for AAC too, by
okay,
the way.
Okay, good, good. We can have each other on speed dial. That's great. Yes. So in just thinking about, you know, our learning objectives, now that you've set the stage for us mm-hmm. so nicely with this, you know, the
the philosophical framework, I think you said, and the, mm-hmm. you know, the differences in assessment. What are some of the techniques to help children reduce severity and frequency of stuttering behaviors? I mean, you made me think of this when you said I didn't get the training. I'm thinking back to the training I had, however many, and we're medium old. So it was, you know, a handful of years ago plus. And I really am curious because I genuinely don't know. This is a skill that I lost.
And that's very normal for so many of us because, you know, the scope of practice does not mean the scope of competence.
1,000%.
We
have a whole episode on that in case anybody's listening and wants to learn more. Side note, but continue.
Yes. So let's talk strategies. I hope that I've already sort of given you the idea that we don't just launch into them, that that's not the only thing we do in stuttering therapy. It's been kind of how we were trained, depending upon how old you are or who your professor was. But strategies are important, but they're not the only thing, even though we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about them. So, all right, because that's the number one request from everybody.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because we do have to be better at them to help our students access them in the real world. So we think about strategies, and let's talk about the three different categories of strategies. I think you can hear them in the learner objectives. There are the types of strategies that help us help children through a moment of stuttering, okay? When they're stuttering, after they've stuttered, as they begin to stutter, we have Van Riper. I'm bowing. Okay. We have Van Riperin strategies. Okay. That's how do I move through stuttering in an easier way? We have to think about the strategies that help enhance fluency. So that's, you know, I am smoothing in, I'm having more flow. And then the third type is the communication skills, because if you are a kid who stutters, who finally gets your voice going and you want to talk, sometimes you've been so worried about your stutter, you haven't picked up on eye contact or turn taking. Not all the time. I've got lots of kids who stutter who are fine with their communication skills. But I like to highlight it because one thing that's happened to me over the past few years is that I've started to realize something that I put into the communication skill box was handling time pressure. So learning how to handle communication time pressure for kids who stutter, it's like kryptonite. Time pressure is kryptonite. It drains all of their abilities to handle, manage, feel comfortable, feel confident. It drains a lot from them. And I got to tell you, for a long time in my career, it was like, we'll do all these other strategies and then we'll get to eye contact and turn taking. And I thought, oh my gosh, I literally have started to move like handling time pressure first. So I'll circle back to that in a minute. When we start talking about strategies, and if I can do a quick soapbox, can we stop?
Permission granted.
We love soapboxes here.
Oh, good, because here comes one. And this came from my husband. I won't tell the long story to get it there, but this came from my husband. I always called them tools, speech tools, right? Cute little toolboxes we built, we made things, you know, it was just cutesy wootsy. And I want you to have a variety of tools to help your stutter. It made sense to me as the, you know, clinician part of me that wanted to be creative. My husband said to me once after a presentation, he said, I gotta just tell you, every time you say the word tools as a person who stutters, I think, oh, I need to be fixed. I know, we're all making that.
Oh, yes. No.
Boom. If we had in one of those Bitmojis where the head blows off, that's where I was. I'm like, well, first of all, could you have told me that 15 years ago? That would have been nice. But can you think what my, I was like, no, I, and then I got defensive. Like, well, I was just trying to be creative. And he's like, that's okay. It's not like every kid who stutters is going to go, oh, she needs to fix me. That's not what I'm saying, but just there's a, the unintended message might be carried over. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so interesting because in AAC, we use that term all the time. So now I'm having this moment of like reflection as well, where, you know, but I think you raised such a good point about the words that we say and the messages that those words could be conveying without mm-hmm. us realizing at all.
Yes. Unintended messages is my, I'm always trying to help myself and my colleagues. We are semantic professionals. How do we not sometimes realize that words matter?
Right.
But it's until you get it. And that's the power of listening to people who stutter, by the way, mm-hmm. we could do a whole nother podcast on that. The idea that it comes from somebody who's been down that road and says, hey, you know, stop telling me to use my tools. I'm doing fine. Right. And so I think it's okay to say, you know, you're not bad people. I wasn't a bad person. Nobody's in trouble. It's just something I'll bring up because you're going to hear me use the word strategies and techniques interchangeably. And when Scott and I rewrite our books, the word tool is going to disappear.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say it's just a semantic thing. It's a semantic thing. Mm-hmm. And so as we talk about the strategies, I want us to think about these are things that can help when the child wants to use them, feels like using them, we want them to have access to them. But we also want them to have access to what one of my students calls honest stuttering. And I've called it clean stuttering and other people call it, you know, a lot different things. This is, I am okay if I let the stutter happen. I don't have to manage every stutter with a technique. I'm not in trouble when I stutter. I am neurologically wired to have that glitch in my speech system. And it's okay to stutter means it's okay to stutter and not use a strategy. So.
But can we just say that is just an incredibly simple, but incredibly powerful and empowering concept for humans to accept yourself as you are, that you do not need to be fixed, that it's not a flaw. Everybody has differences. Everybody has the way that they are, and the power of accepting yourself and how, I don't know, that just opens up so many more possibilities and opportunities because you're not creating a barrier for yourself. I need that more. I mean, that's for like a human condition kind of a thing. I mean, I think that's so powerful and important for us to embrace that as therapists with our clients. I mean, that's just awesome.
Well, it's a paradigm shift for us as well, because we were trained to get that stuttering, you know, under control. And the word control just means fight. And the word control might mean I can control it by not raising my hand. I can control it by pushing through it or avoiding the word or changing the word. None of those things allow us to learn how to accept and even handle. How can you do a pull out if you're not allowing the stutter to happen? So like all of Van Riper's strategies are strategies that you got to let the stutter happen, as he called it, touch the hot stove, you know, in order to even try to ease up the stutter
mm-hmm.
instead of push, change, go around.
It's making me think of this old Hindu vignette sort of story that I read a long time ago about, he says, the only way out is through. There's once you have to move through something and allow it to happen to see the other side of it. You can't go around things. You have to experience them. It was very deep of me to pull that out of my hat.
I am so impressed. I'm going to start an OM. OM. No, it's so real. I have something in my office that says life is now in session.
I love that.
Because it's this is life lessons almost more than it's stuttering lessons. Mm-hmm. It's about, I am okay exactly the way I am. If I so choose to try to ease up my communication, notice I did not say have fluent speech. If I try to ease up my communication, that's my business. Okay. If I want to stutter like I mean it, okay, that's my business too. Now that's tough. I'm not going to just throw that in there like all kids are going to go, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what other people think. You know, my adolescent kids are looking at me like, you have lost your mind. But you have to be, we have to be part of that voice in the chorus that says these strategies are for easier communication. Because the minute the strategies become for fluency, the unintended message is that fluency is good and stuttering is bad. If a kid stutters after an easy onset, I would like, and I've had kids go, oops, I messed up. I'm like, okay, don't react. But mess up means they think the stutter was a mistake. And that's why we have to be very balanced in our approach to this, and that every strategy is for easier communication when you want, if you want, and how you want. And it's not there so that you don't stutter. Because that's an expectation of fluency that neurologically they can't get to. And it's going to make them feel like failures.
I feel like that's such a powerful message and so important for speech pathologists. I think one of the barriers, as somebody who also sees myself as someone who's, this is not in my scope of competence. You know, I have feelings like I can't fix this, and you guys can't see my air quotes, but I think, you know, we are trained to be fixers of things. And I think, you know, what I'm listening to you and thinking about as you're speaking is just that it is really a shift. And I think that it's a shift, you know, I mean, I'm having all sorts of like the blown mind emoji over here. So this is a great conversation, but you know, I think that it's a shift that could benefit us as a field in general, because I think that you can make a very similar point about all sorts of other, you know, speech and language issues that we're treating. I think it's so powerful that you're here sort of as a helper and a guide to provide some strategies and supports that the communicator can choose to use or not use depending upon the situation. And I just think that's such an empowering shift in our typical, from our typical dynamic, which is SLP as expert fixer. It's just, I don't know, very powerful stuff.
I'm having a lot of feelings.
I'm so glad you said that. It's
too.
Okay to have feelings. I validate those.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
All the feels. We're going to do all the feels, because there is no such thing as a negative or a positive feeling. It's just a feeling. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Thank you, Wayne Dyer. Okay. And there's another Hindu, you know, thing from the past. But guys, that's why I'm talking about how, if we just launch into strategies and like, okay, we're going to get that, you know, I think I broke the internet a couple of years ago when I said out loud and wrote in a webinar that we should never have another goal ever for percents of stuttered speech or percents of fluent speech. I think everybody was like, what do I write a goal for then?
Right.
Because we were trained to decrease the amount of stuttering. We were not helped to understand that that's like chasing a greased pig.
That okay? image is amazing. Oh, so, that's going to be with me until the day I die. Thank you for
gonna
that.
And I'm going to get a call from PETA.
That was a gift. That was a gift. I mean, you're right. I've never had the pleasure of chasing a greased pig, but in my mind, there's
pretty
no
frustrating.
Other, yeah, there is no other comparison now.
But do you see that there, the natural, the condition of stuttering, we have a line that we always say, the only consistent thing about stuttering is that it's inconsistent. So if you write a goal for percents of fluent speech, the kid comes in, is that spontaneously fluent? Is it managed fluent? Is it artificially fluent? Or is it, you know, none of the, is it avoided fluent? And none of those things are all that great. You know, spontaneous fluency is great, but you know what? Kids who have stutters don't always have spontaneous fluency. So how can we say, you know, we want them to have an easier speech. We want them to flow easier. So that's the easy onset, the pausing and phrasing, the light articulatory contact. Those are the three main ones. There's a lot of names for those. Can I please have people stop putting on Pinterest that there's 13 techniques? They're mushy mouth, feather speech, smushy, whatever. Stop it. That's all easy onset. Okay. The kids are going, which one of the five do I use? And they're 9 years old. Okay. It's cute, but just like my cutesy toolbox is now a thing of the past, so can the 15 tools. Okay. And you're not mad. I'm not mad. You're not in trouble. I'm just saying, can we simplify this a little for kids and not make it so tough? So that's those. Now, when I get into a stutter, I want to be able to sometimes ease through it. Okay. So I'm going to have the pull out, get your Van Riper out. Here we go. Pull out, preparatory set, and cancellation with a modicum of voluntary stutter thrown in. All right. So these are the ones that help us ease the amount of tension and decrease struggle. The last thing we want a kid to be doing when they get into a stutter is push harder. We're increasing tension that way, right? So, but it's a normal, natural response to, I can't move this word out my mouth. Mm-hmm. So they're going to push harder, and that's okay. They're not in trouble either. We're just going to try to help them be okay, number one, with the stutter, let it happen. And then if you want to, here are some ways. Yep. And then of course, I will talk about the communication parts of all of that. So we want those things to be part of increasing flow of speech or decreasing struggle of stutters, but none of that gives us a percent of fluency. It gives us, we can measure percents of how they did with the actual strategy. So instead of the child was this much fluent, the child will utilize, will understand and use easy onsets at this level and this level with this much cueing or that, you know, we know how to write those goals. Okay. But that's the skill, not an expectation of fluency. And that's the difference.
And that is a big difference. I mean, what I hear you saying, just to say it back to you, is that, you know, instead of writing these broad goals about overall actual fluency, what we need to be doing is, you know, if we need those percentages in there, we can write percentages with respect to like the actual strategy practice, but not that application.
Yes, we're just going to help them move that from the therapy room, just like we do with our tick and language. We know how to help them systematically get it out of the therapy room, because, you know, we're talking about, I talk with my students all the time, strategies aren't for Miss Nina's room. We learn them here. We practice them here. We get all awkward with them here because you have to make them so long and they feel so weird. We do all of that here. We desensitize to them and get to a level of skill with them. And then we take them on the road.
Amy and I talk a lot about data collection, and I'm wondering, all of the things that you're talking about are so empowering for the client that I would imagine, you know, having a way to systematically measure your clients' attitudes and feelings about their own strategy use is really important. Is that something that you do like regularly or with a specific tool, or is it just part of a conversation in your regular, in your daily or, you know, ongoing therapy appointments?
It's part of every therapy session. And on the, on our website on stutteringtherapyresources.com, you're going to find the free resource section, and you're going to click on, understanding stuttering. I think I'll click on everything. It's all good stuff. And, it's free and it's ready for you. That speech notebook that we write about in our book. And I did a 2-page handout on how to start a speech notebook so that you can collect portfolio assessment data that is IDEA authorized, right? We don't have to have a standardized test for this. You can collect the data of, you know, I used blank, we'll talk about strategies for a minute. I used blank strategies this many times, you know, and that's child reported data. You can have, you know, clinician observation, you can do rubrics. There are many ways to get this information. And then the speech notebook really helps when we get into the thoughts and feelings as well, because those aren't as easily measured by a plus or a minus on a page. You know, and so it's all about our creativity in how we collect data, and that the fact that we have to leave off the table that there has to be a percentage all the time or a plus or a minus on a page somewhere. Because so much of stuttering therapy is the thoughts and feelings and the impact that this condition has on the child's communication and life, that it's not always going to fit nicely into a box, but it can be measured and it can be documented and it can be explained to parents and others and kids that we're making progress.
And I have to assume, like so many other aspects of our field, in this, you know, importance of data collection and making sure that the data you're collecting is relevant and important and functional to guide your treatment, that if you don't include some of those qualitative components and feelings components, then you're not collecting the data that will change your, or change your strategies or change your therapy techniques and all of these other things. It's just so fundamentally important. I can't imagine. I mean, I don't, as we all know, I don't know anything about fluency, but if you, it seems to me that if you are not finding some way to collect that information, you're really missing the boat.
And it is going to keep you from moving that child forward long-term. Okay. We want a new generation of kids who stutter to love the fact that they went to speech therapy. Because the old generation thought we sucked.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I mean, I still stutter. You know, those people never helped me. I mean, there was a whole movement in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s of anti-speech therapy because we didn't actually maybe know as much as we needed to, right? And we didn't share. It was like, I'm going to do therapy at you instead of we're going to have a therapeutic alliance of what you need and what I can help you with and things that I'm not going to be able to help you with. I'll get you to a support group or a support organization. We didn't have access to a lot of that. So there was a lot of, you know, not loving speech therapists. And I think it's okay for us all to go, okay, I'm not going to cure stuttering, but I got some game. I got some things that I can do to try to help be part of your journey. But it's not just going to be, I'm going to help you stop stuttering or help you stutter less. It's going to be, how do you want to handle this? Let's go.
I think that is such a meaningful shift. It makes me sad to think about students who have had a bad experience with speech language pathologists. Like, it makes me sad for our field as a whole. it connects back to the piece I think about being the fixer. And then if you go to this person who's supposed to fix you and they don't fix you, I'm using a lot of air quotes. This is bad for an auditory modality. You know, but when that's happening, and if the magic fixing doesn't happen, then that must, that that's also imparting a feeling of failure. Like it's just a bad,
that's just a bad everywhere. Cycle. Nobody's winning in that scenario. The student isn't winning. The speech pathologist isn't winning. And you know, we've talked about this a little bit in a previous episode where we discussed counseling and the importance of not be seeing yourself as the person who is sent to fix something. And I think that this is such a great, and it's true across all disciplines and all, you know, all of the individuals that we serve, but this is just so relevant.
And notice how we're not actually going to get to a lot of the strategies in our hour today, because it, and I'm actually feeling blessed about that. We can always do more. Plus all of the strategies, we have a video for every single one of them on our website where we teach SLPs to teach kids who stutter these strategies.
That's fantastic. Okay.
Because so I threw out all of those names, and we're probably not going to let get to Nina doing them with you right now, but know that those are there in our book. We have the summary sheet of what everyone is and how you, you know, helping the child understand why it's that way. And so all of this stuff is, the resources are there, right? But if you jump too close into strategies without thinking about all the other stuff, how can a kid change what they don't understand? How can a kid handle a stutter that he won't let happen? How can I feel comfortable and confident as a person who happens to stutter sometimes if all the messages I've ever gotten are use your slow speech? By the way, that's not a strategy. Did you hear me say slow speech? I said nothing about slow speech. I kind of blew up Instagram the other day a little bit because I said we never say it. But there's ways to help decrease communication rate, pausing and freezing, handling time pressure, without going, let's slow down. What the heck does slow down mean? But that's another soapbox for another time.
I was just going to ask, isn't it, as an uninformed person, I feel like I have to preface everything I say with that. Isn't it true that slowing down speech is a very commonly used strategy? I feel like in the little that I know, that is a very common suggestion or, you know, strategy that is recommended.
And because of time pressure, I'm going to be brief, brutal, and flippant. Are we ready?
I'm ready. It's okay. My favorite.
I know, it's Miss Nina Unplugged today. She's had espresso.
I love it.
When people tell kids to slow down, it's number one thing that they hate. Kids who stutter hate hearing that. How slow? And as my husband says, I'm not getting any words out now. How much slower do you want me to be? Right. And so when you say slow down, what does that mean? How slow? Okay. And I want kids who stutter to say to parents, teachers, SLPs across the world, whenever they say, let's use our slow talking, I want the kids who stutter to look at them and say, you first.
I love that.
You're a fully functioning professional human being as an adult, and you're not going to talk like that. Why on earth do you think I'm going to? I'm 9. I just want to talk. I want to enjoy communication. And every time I get into enjoying it and I have a stutter, somebody goes, wait, use your tools. Oh my gosh. What message does that send? I'm not talking, quote, air quote, air quote, right. I'm not doing it right. So maybe I just won't do it. Maybe I just won't raise my hand. And then we go into the ICF model of all the other stuff that matters. So strategies are helpful. They are part of what we do. They are not all of what we do. The evidence-based strategy list is small, not big. And helping kids ease their communication, ease into speech, and ease out of stutters, avoid less. Okay, because it's okay to stutter. So I don't have to avoid that word if I feel like I'm going to stutter on it. all of this, as you can probably surmise, is a complex set of variables that that sort of proves why I said at the top of our hour that stuttering therapy is not easy. So whoever's selling you that snake oil, please enjoy it if you want, but understand it's only going to get you so far, and it may get you to the wrong place. Because if we're tapping, if we're clapping, if we're clipping, if we're snapping, if we're doing things in unison, all of that is so old and so off the table, it's time to let it go, because that's where we get into artificial fluency, fake fluency, avoided fluency, which isn't fluency at all.
I'm speechless. I mean, it's not good to be speechless when you host a podcast, but so I'll try. The things that you're saying are profound. I'm an uninformed person, but I am not only now digesting this mindset shift to, you know, not reducing fluency, to having more of a counseling lens. I'm also now reflecting on, I'm just very grateful that I have never really treated someone with fluency, because I would have done it all wrong. I just would have done it all wrong. And I love your passion about this. I'm eating this up. This is so great.
It's so good.
I don't have anything good to say, because you said everything and no one can follow that.
May I say something before we go?
Yes.
Yes, please.
We have about 5 minutes left. Go for it.
Okay. Let's wrap up with this. A little Wayne Dyer at the end, okay? For any therapist who is feeling the way you just expressed, okay? Let me tell you, if I had a kiddo with AAC, okay? It's just bad juju. If I had a kiddo with a swallowing disorder, they'd choke and die. I'd be in a due process and maybe, I don't know, in jail, okay? I'm gonna tell you that you don't need to be a stuttering specialist to do this well, but accessing the change in that and realizing to give yourself grace. Okay. If I had to service a child, okay, that wasn't really in my scope of competence, I'd be consulting and learning and growing. Yes. But I couldn't do it all at once. So give yourself grace and realize, if you've done some of the stop, slow down, start over, take a deep breath, think about what you're going to say, use your tools, and everybody stutters, the top 7 things never to say. Okay. If you've said them, if you've done them, you can't have a better past. Okay. That's Wayne Dyer. You can't have a better past. You have to say, wow, okay, I'm not a bad person. I did what I thought was right. I'm not in trouble. And now I'm going to move forward in a way that makes, because this stuff makes sense. It does. It makes sense when somebody says it to you and you're like, oh my gosh, of course.
That does make sense.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes, it's like so obvious, but oh my gosh, also so novel, and brain explode emoji.
Yeah.
All at the same time, somehow.
Small steps, give grace, move forward.
No one can say anything after that. That is just, it's just like one profound thing after another over here. I'm so glad that our listeners have not only had the opportunity to hear you speak, but your website is so chocked full of resources, and we are going to beg you to come back and hang out with us
again. Yes, we are.
Because
be prepared.
Not only the knowledge that you have, but it's very clear that this particular clinical area doesn't get the airtime it deserves. And yes, I know that was sort of a pun because we're doing a podcast. It doesn't get the airtime it deserves. It's a very specific area of competence. And it's just so important. It's just so, so, so important. So thank you again so much for your being so generous with your time. And hanging out with us. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to say, or anything you want to leave our listeners?
Well, just this has been a year. Okay. So nobody has been doing their best therapy. Well, I shouldn't say nobody, maybe somebody is. It wasn't me. Okay. And I understand that doing this kind of therapy virtually, I just did 2 hours with the San Diego Unified ladies on stuttering therapy in a virtual world. And it's okay to be where we are. Okay. We don't want to be here 30 years from now. And if you're not feeling comfortable, competent, or confident, which are my three C's, in stuttering therapy, know that you're not in trouble. But, you know, if you stay where you are, okay, then that's when we get into some ethical issues. Okay. You didn't, you know, kill the code of ethics by treating a kid who stutters and say, slow down. But if we stay stuck, you know, without moving forward a little bit at a time, then that's where we don't want to be. So it's okay to take your time, move forward, and access the good stuff. Be a savvy consumer of what you're finding online.
Yes, times 10,000. Times 10,000. I think that is like so, so important. And another whole episode. It's just like,
it is.
There's
it
everything is. We say is
full
like,
of gems. You're throwing gems everywhere. It's lovely.
No one can see us. We're like aggressively, yes, we're like aggressively pumping our arms. This is just so great.
Can I repeat that in a different way? Influencer yes, does not always mean expert. Some yes. influencers are experts. Some influencers are just influencers. Mm-hmm. So take your time, be savvy consumers. And because we don't feel comfortable and confident in stuttering therapy, sometimes we grab whatever is shiny, new,
tangible,
and has a cute font. So understand that you've got to know where that information came from. You've got to know how old it is, how new it is. Does it have an evidence base? You know, we're not doing Reiki therapy, which I got an email for the other day. Can we do Reiki therapy with kids? No, not evidence-based. They're not going to clean your chakras and get the stuttering gone, but I love you for asking.
Right. Well, I mean, go ahead.
Use your evidence-based eyes that, you know, we all had to develop back in graduate school when we were reading through papers and trying to determine if that was a quality study or not. You know, I mean, I think it is in this day of, I'm old enough that I grew up before social media and cell phones and all of these things, but in the world that we live in now, there's so much information overload, and being a critical consumer professionally as well as personally is a really important skill set to develop.
So important. And I think we can say with confidence that for our listeners who are consuming this piece of social media, this is an evidence-based lecture from someone who has lots of experience and it's within their scope of expertise. Please definitely go to the episode page to find all of the references and resources related to Nina's website, all the things that she listed here throughout the course of this episode. It's all in the show notes and on the and on our website. Feel free to reach out to us anytime with questions. We are happy to direct our listeners over to Nina's contact information and website if they need any additional questions. Don't be shy. You never learn more unless you ask a question. I ask the dumbest questions all the time. It's a cornerstone of professional development. So please don't be shy. And we're just grateful to you, Nina, and grateful to our listeners for tuning in. So reach out anytime. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.